Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-winged perspective. I'm back, as you can hear. It is June 3rd, 2017. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And we did our Girls Only cast last week. We'll be doing more of those for sure.
Yes.
And one or two things happened this week, which seems like we say every friggin' week.
Yeah.
But we have copious notes prepared.
Yes.
Or at least Rachel does.
I do.
And we're going to talk about stuff.
Yes.
So let's just jump right on in.
Okay.
What the hell is going on, Rachel Ann?
Well, I think we should start with the sort of big news of the week, which was the Paris Agreement.
The U.S. pulling out of the Paris
Agreement. The U.S. Accords. Pulling out of the Paris Agreement. Yes. So.
All right. So educate us, because I know we got a bunch of listeners going, I heard about this. This seems bad, but I don't know what the hell's going on. Help us, Rachel.
Yes. Okay. So in 2015, basically the entire world, with the exception of Nicaragua and Syria, mm-hmm. got together and agreed that this climate change thing is pretty bad. And we should probably do something about it. And that one country really can't do it on their own. Every country emits carbon emissions, and so it needs to be a global effort.
Yes.
So they met in Paris and decided that one of the key goals would be to try to keep the Earth's temperature from rising no more than 2 degrees.
2 degrees centigrade.
Right.
Which is like 7 or more degrees Fahrenheit.
Right. So, because, you know, science and, you know, it's kind of arbitrary, but this was the goal. And it's a pretty lofty goal.
Well, yeah, and let's back that up for a second. Because one of the things that Trump and the right-wingers, the talking points you're using is, what's 2 degrees? Come on, that's nothing. You wouldn't even know a 2-degree change. First of all, it's 2 degrees centigrade. The rest of the world pretty much uses centigrade.
Isn't it Celsius?
I think that's the same thing, babe.
Oh, okay.
And that equates to, I think, 7-point-something Fahrenheit, which is actually a real big deal.
Yes.
Especially when it's an average.
Right.
Over time.
So they said, they basically looked at all the different countries. Every country kind of got their own little, like, breakdown of how many, you know, how much you emit carbon-wise. And then they did some math and said, so each country has a different goal to reduce.
Can I jump in a little bit on that, too?
Sure.
They also figured out these calculations based on the wealth and GDP and potential output of the different countries.
Right.
So that, like, you know, Namibia is not going to be on the same expectations as the United States relative to their, you know, what they can afford to do.
Right. And jumping in on that, we are also asking some of these underdeveloped countries to not use the same methods to industrialize that first world countries used, because we've discovered that those things are very bad for the environment.
Yeah, so hey, why don't you invest in some of our green tech?
So we're going to invest in them. That's one of the things that a bunch of the wealthier countries in the world have agreed to do, was invest in some of these underdeveloped nations in green energy for them to continue to develop their economies, and so that they aren't using the same methods that we use, like coal and all of that.
Who's got the patent on those green technologies?
Well, no one. I mean, what do you mean?
Well, getting to a broader point, I'm jumping ahead here, but this is very... There's a reason, like, the business community and the CEOs of major companies and even energy companies are like, WTF, Trump, what are you doing?
But we'll get to that. Okay, so the U.S. goal was set at reducing carbon emissions by 26 to 28% by 2025.
Yeah, it's a lofty goal.
But it is, very much so. We were on target to meet that goal until now. We have reduced our emissions by about 14% as of 2016. So that was... We were doing pretty good. And Trump decided, as was his campaign promise, that this was a, quote, bad deal, and that he would be pulling out of the Paris Agreement, which sent shockwaves kind of through the world. So how that works, I think this is important to note, is as part of the Paris Agreement, he can pull out of it. He can decide that we're not going to do it, but... The way that it's written, there's some rules around the timing of this. So he can't actually pull out of the Paris Accord until November 4th of 2019, mm-hmm. and it won't take effect until November 4th of 2020, which is very interesting because that is exactly one day after the next presidential election in the
United
States.
It's almost like we kind of knew what we were doing with that, huh?
Yeah, maybe so.
Like, hey, just in case, look, just in case some jackass
Now, gets elected. What's interesting about that is that, of course, the person who's elected on November 3rd of 2020 will not... be inaugurated until
he'll have a couple months of perhaps a mess to clean
but
up.
It will certainly make climate an election issue.
It's how it wasn't this year.
Yeah.
Beats the crap out of me, but I don't know, you Steinbots, you Bernie or Busters, you tell me you care so much about the environment that you want to crap all over it because something Wall Street speech.
Right.
Okay, here
yeah,
we are.
Exactly. So fuck you guys and all the Republicans yeah. and everyone else. Okay, so there's been some interesting things that have happened out of this. During his speech, Trump said, "I was elected to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris."
Yeah.
So I'm going to say this there's going to be kind of a theme on today's podcast, which is Rachel loves mayors. Some mayors have just been nailing it with this Trump administration lately, including our own Denver mayor, Michael Hancock, who I love.
Of course. He's great.
But mayors have just been nailing it this week. So,
well, can I back up just one second?
Sure.
The reason, you know, that line could have been a whatever line, but right away... you had the Chris Salizas of the world just basically, like, masturbating on camera.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, what a great line. That's going to play so well. These are the blue-collar, rust-belt, white working-class words that got Trump elected. And, oh, God, that's a great line. And
right.
Of course, it's horseshit.
Yeah.
And Rachel's going to explain why.
Yeah. Okay, so Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto... immediately took to Twitter to say, basically, go fuck yourself, Trump. The first thing he said was, this is a quote, "Fact, Hillary Clinton received 80% of the vote in Pittsburgh."
Hold on, yeah, that's Pittsburgh proper. Allegheny County was more like 60-40, but she won that area decisively.
Yeah. "Pittsburgh stands with the world and will follow the Paris Agreement." And then he went on to say a bunch of other things about how the economy of Pittsburgh actually is nothing like what most people might think.
No, it's really heavy green tech.
Yeah, exactly.
Green tech saved and revived the city.
Right, yeah.
Which
so, like,
Liza and those jackasses didn't even bother to
right.
look up.
No.
They just jumped up and down like banshees because they were really excited about the Pittsburgh.
And the people of Pittsburgh
Paris
were like, wait. Well, hold on.
We're fuck not you. Like, we want to stay in this.
And we're not like this weird, like, rundown town of like old factories that aren't running anymore. And steelworkers, that's not what our economy is based on anymore. We've like revolutionized ourselves with tech and with,
sorry to keep interrupting and back up again, but just. Trying to flesh out this whole thing for people to really get a picture of what this all means. They call it the Steel City because that's what it used to be. And then some, basically, it's complicated, but a lot of things like tariff and these different things were eased and relaxed so big companies could allow more foreign workers and foreign steel to help their bottom line come in. And it basically killed the steel industry in this country.
Right.
And so you're talking about the late 70s, early 80s. It decimated the economy.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh had to completely rebuild and reinvent itself.
And it did.
Largely with green tech and green technology.
Right. So he picked a really bad city to have as his example of... why we should pull out of the Paris Accord.
He would have if anything still mattered in the world.
Right. But it's ironic that that's the city he picked.
Yeah,
he could have picked any city, and that was just a particularly bad example.
Right. But our dads, who are thousands of miles away from Pittsburgh...
don't know that.
...and never been there, are probably yelling online at people, Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Right. 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 Okay.
So it's the battle cry for the uneducated.
Not
that our... folks are uneducated, but on this subject they are.
Right. Okay, so that's kind of what happened. Trump was like, we're going to renegotiate the deal, and Italy, Germany, and France basically said, haha, lol, no.
Macron, who is impressing a lot of people so far.
Yes.
We don't know how he's going to be long-term.
Who just won the election in France, we should say.
But there were squeaky people who were like, he's too moderate, he's too whatever. He's like, nah, he looks legit.
Yeah. He's, I mean, for France, certainly he is moderate.
Yeah.
For the U.S.
Oh, my God.
He's wicked liberal.
Of course.
But
that's what
France,
people don't understand. Yeah. Like, you had, like...
European politics is way different.
Again, this new generation of progressive purists who... We're going to rant on them so hard again today. Sorry, guys. No, not sorry. They were, oh, I don't know about this Macron guy. You know, he's just another shill, corporate, whatever. It's like... No, his heart is more than in the right place.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Okay. Or so it seems to be so far.
So then really stupid people said really stupid things. I'm going to read two quotes.
Okay.
Republican Congressman Tim Walberg said of Michigan in a town hall in Coldwater, out loud, he said this. Quote, well... As a Christian, I believe there is a creator in God who is much bigger than us, and I'm confident that if there is a real problem, he can take care of it, in reference to climate change. And
well, why not just everything, then? Why even
just
be in
Jesus
Congress?
Take the wheel as our new...
Yeah.
Fuck it. God will just take care of it. Like, oh my God.
Why that's even our, show up for your job in Congress?
God will take care of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. Someone on Twitter that was very smart was quoting him and then said... you know, that he said that, and then they put, like, God, and then, quote, I gave you scientists. Like, that, what kind of crazy bullshit nonsense policy is that?
Yeah, it reminds
me. We have the capacity to take care of this with science.
Reminds me of the ancient joke about the old lady whose house is, there's a flood, and she's on the roof of her house,
right.
And the boat comes by, and the helicopter comes by, and she keeps saying, no.
No, no, God's going to take
me,
care of it.
She dies, and God...
It's like, bitch, like, I sent you like a boat and a helicopter and like a raft. I sent you all this shit. What the hell are you doing? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, they should, if you live in Michigan, you might want to call him and let him know that's not a great.
Michigan has turned into a purple state.
Yeah.
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 I don't know. It's a bunch of grumpy white people.
Well,
blaming
this
the
guy is
decline
a...
of the industry, in, of their industry on brown people.
Well, this guy is a congressman, so he'll be up for re-election in 2018 with the rest of them.
Yeah, but
I highly encourage
you. He could be in a horribly gerrymandered district.
To vote and do everything you can to defeat him. Okay, next, Eric Erickson, proverbial just garbage human from the right.
Oh, yeah, there was like 5 minutes where people were starting to quote him because he was anti-Trump, I guess, during the primaries.
He is one of the worst people on earth.
Oh, no, he is an absolute garbage person. Before we get to, well, let's talk about what he said first, and then I'll give you my two cents on why, perversely, I don't mind him saying this stuff.
Okay, he said, I worship Jesus, not Mother Earth. He calls us to be good stewards of the planet, but that doesn't mean I have to care about global warming.
Yeah, okay, so Eric Erickson's been on a tear lately, and his tear is basically... When the Bible says take care of other people, it just means other Christians, not, you know, whatever. The Bible, it doesn't really mean help the poor. When it said help the poor, it means help just poor Christians. The rest of the poor can go F themselves. I mean, he's literally saying this stuff.
Right, out loud, yeah.
Some horrible things, obviously, about gay people. Just
women. He's really, I mean, he's like been a darling on the far right conservative Christian movement for decades.
Well, then he ran afoul a little bit because he didn't like Trump and he preferred Cruz, I think. But in any event, now he's back doing his shtick. And I'm like, I'm listening to that and I'm thinking of your typical evangelical, like super, with the people that wear their American evangelical Christianity on their sleeve. I'm like, yeah, this is what they believe. So here's somebody who's not bullshitting and sugarcoating it and saying, oh, no, no, we really care about people. He's like, no, F everybody except for white Christians.
Yeah.
And or people who identify themselves as white Christians.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, shine a light on this. This is what it is. Mm-hmm. This is what these people think. This is what they care about. F you. I've got mine. The richer, the better, and the whiter, the better. And the Bible actually says the richer and the whiter and the better. And help the poor just means other Christians.
Yeah, that are maybe having like a hard time, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like, okay, this is what they believe.
It's, at least he's being honest.
Yeah, at least he's being honest, and he's shining a bright, ugly light on what American evangelical Christianity is,
yes.
What it stands for.
What it looks like from a policy perspective. Absolutely, absolutely.
From a culture perspective. Yeah. This is when people walk around and they say, I'm a values voter and I'm a staunch conservative Christian, this is what they mean. It means fuck you.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Not taking into account anything that the Bible actually said or Jesus himself said, but that's fine. Fuck
well,
that guy.
I mean, people have
he
been
twisting. He was a big old commie
Look,
anyway.
People have been twisting the Bible for as long as the Bible's been around.
Yes.
I mean, go back to Torquemada and the Spanish Inquisition and the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan. They all use some twisted version of the Bible.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean that the Bible is inherently evil. Because, you know, there's some people on our side that kind of try to say that. And I'm like, well, that's the same argument that people like Bill Maher use about the Quran. And then you get into this gross territory. It's like, no, you can take VCR instructions and twist them into racism, you know, somehow if
right.
you want.
Right.
You know, that's just the kind of the nature of the beast. And yes, there are some really horrible, sexist, ridiculous things in the Bible, especially mm-hmm. if you take it literally.
Yes.
And I'm not advocating before against the Bible. I'm just saying, for people to use the Bible and twist it into horrible, gross, disgusting classism, racism,
homophobia
is yeah. not a new thing.
It's very par for the course.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Which you can also do with the Quran and the Torah and the Dead Sea Scrolls and, you know, whatever the Buddhists use. Yeah.
It's just Christianity is really good at it.
Well, American evangelical Christianity has got a real...
Since the 80s.
Strong base. Oh, when before, before that.
Well, hold on. When I was studying political science in college, I read this book about how the Christian right movement was politicized because really prior to the 70s and 80s, it wasn't.
No, they kind of sat it out or they went 50-50.
It's a very fascinating book about how and why it became... political weapon.
So Lee Atwater.
It's great, but it's relatively new that this sort of phenomenon in American political culture, at least.
Yeah, Jerry Falwell got involved, and
Reagan
and reached out to Jerry Falwell.
And there's just a bunch of
And here we are.
So that's the Paris Agreement. That's what is going on. It has mobilized a lot of progressives and people who care about the environment. And, you know, a lot of cities and states have said, and companies have come out and said, I don't care what this man says. We will continue to do everything that we were doing before and stand by the agreement and continue to reduce our emissions per the agreement, which is good. So it's not like Donald Trump can say you're not allowed to do that or something. You know, he's just saying, I mean, it's really is devastating for the sort of global view of it because
it is
voluntary
for
and
our
we
standing.
All came together and mm-hmm. we said, this is what we're going to do together. And it is fragile. And us being the sort of, you know, leader of the free world or whatever you want to say, it was important that we did this. American leadership created this Paris Agreement along with European
Obama.
Leadership. But certainly Obama
Thanks,
was
Obama.
A huge driver behind this. And if we pull out, it's certainly not a great incentive for other countries who are struggling with it or really didn't want to do it or sort of got strong-armed into it to say, well, fuck it, we're not going to do it either. I mean, the whole thing could fall apart. And that would be devastating.
You know what? It could, but I actually think there's so much anti-Trump sentiment now that there's like a strong cohesion. And I think, ironically, there's some irony going here. I'm going to explain. Xi in China now sees an opening and says, well, we have wanted to be considered the hegemon in the world.
Right.
And we can take the lead on this. And then these European countries will start looking to us instead of Washington.
Yeah.
Now, on the whole, that sucks for the United States.
Yes.
But it might, ironically, help the planet in this sense.
Yeah.
To
Maybe.
Some degree.
Maybe.
And the same thing with Macron and France and Merkel. They're like, we'll step up to the plate and be the leaders on this.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. Justin Trudeau's statement was something like, it's, you know, tragedy that the United States federal government pulled out of the Paris Agreement. And I think there was some talk about how he phrased that, that the world is sort of separating Trump from America. He didn't say the America did this. I think he understands that Americans don't want this.
Right.
But the United States federal government is a different thing than America now. And that is unprecedented, I think. Good, because I think it's good that countries realize that we don't want him.
It's not unprecedented. Think back to the Vietnam War.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, the Americans, by and large, it is certain point didn't want anything to do with that, yet it persisted and persisted and persisted.
Because no, I just mean separating out the United States federal government from the United States from other foreign leaders is not something that is typically done.
No, no, it's not.
The president sort of represents the country. That's how it normally works.
But yeah.
In this case, other countries are looking at the country and the president as very separate things.
Right. Trudeau is basically coming out and saying, okay, the guy who was elected president doesn't actually speak for the United States, but this is what's happening regardless.
Exactly. This is what he decided to do, but I understand that the American people do not agree. So that was interesting. Okay. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, I've got more about Paris.
Oh, okay.
So there's some irony that's happening here, and let's talk about it, and let's talk about what ironically might help us. Despite what your uncle and Fox News and Trump say, coal jobs aren't coming back.
Ever.
Because forget about the environmental costs. It's just not profitable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The whole system has moved towards green tech.
Yep.
And so the flip side of the Paris Agreement was that this really paved the runway for United States and United States energy and startup companies and other tech companies to really grab a foothold and lead the way on the green tech future.
Yes.
And that the whole world had decided to ascribe to.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So people like Elon Musk, and I know Tesla's his whole deal, and Elon Musk is kind of a garbage person, and they have a sexual discrimination flap that's happening right now. But the point is that, like, this is good for green tech. And the United States being the global leaders in green tech, the long-term benefits looked really, really good for the United States economy. And this is why you had a lot of even very conservative people and a lot of CEOs and economists saying, yeah, this is good for us.
Yes.
This is actually what we need. Now, you did have some holdouts maybe in the energy industry. And
even some of them, though, are like, if we can get an investment in learning to make different energy, like, great, because everybody understands that's the future.
Oh, even Tillerson was against pulling out of this.
Yeah, I mean, everyone understands that this is not, we're not going backward, we're going forward, and this is the future, and there's a shitload of money to be made, and the environment, and the economy, and jobs, and I mean,
Here's the thing, right? If our friend Raul was on, he would get a kick out of this. The invisible hand, for the most part, is an excuse to make the world a garbage place for rich people.
Yeah.
In this case, it might save our ass.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The CEOs and the shareholders in these green tech companies are not going to step back and say, okay, well, Trump said we're back to coal and fossil fuels.
Not going to make money anymore. Totally. No. Fuck that. No. They're definitely still going to do everything that they were already planning to do.
Right. Which by virtue of doing that and changing over the face of energy, we might get to that goal anyway, regardless of what's on paper.
Yeah.
Maybe. Now, there's way more symbolism and some practical matters with pulling out of the Paris Accords that is not helpful.
Yeah. No. It's not like we can excuse him doing this.
No, absolutely not.
What he did was inexcusable.
But
it's not hopeless.
The green tech industry is not going to stop and go throw up their hands and go, oh, well, back to the coal mines.
No.
And back to extracting fossil fuels.
What they are saying is, God, why are you making this so difficult? The whole point of this was like we would have some infrastructure and some help and support, and like we were all going to do this together, and now you're throwing you're throwing all that off. So now we have to reevaluate and stop. You know, I mean, it's
okay.
Horrifying what he did, but I see your point. Like, absolutely, they're not going to stop and just go, oh, well, I guess we'll just go back to coal.
Yeah,
like, they're going to keep doing what they're doing.
Of course.
But it's still, you know, it's
Here's some
ideal.
Things to understand. During this election, the media decided to paint a very romanticized picture of the coal miner and coal industry,
mm-hmm.
which
the real Americans.
I feel horrible for coal miners, by the way. That's a garbage shit job. They've been used, abused, and coal company CEOs, by the way, are the worst horrible garbage people on earth. Yes. They don't care who dies in a mine and gets trapped and gets black lung.
Nope, they don't.
Besides that for a second, you had Trump saw an opening in coal country because there hasn't been enough investment in changing that economy over and educating these people and helping them since the coal industry died, because you're talking about generations and generations and generations of coal miners.
Right.
It's like, even though it was a shit, horrible, garbage life, it was a job. You can always...
You make pretty good money.
Go be a coal miner and...
You can support your family.
Support your family until you died of black lung.
Right. 50. Yeah.
And then Hillary famously said, I'm going to put coal miners out of business. Which was a gaffe.
She was being honest.
She's being honest, but it was a gaffe. You don't put it that way. You put it another way. But be that as it may. So then we got this very romanticized picture and everything. All the pundits, all the coal country, coal country, coal country, coal miners, coal miners, coal miners. The reality is right now there's about 50,000 coal mining jobs in the entire country. There are at least that many green tech type jobs, I think, in Pittsburgh alone.
Right.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I think that's kind of where we are. So extrapolate that to the whole country, and what you're talking about in terms of romanticizing and bringing back the coal miners is a fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's really about this. It's that about Trump had a winning campaign message with this, mostly because people like our dads who wouldn't set foot in a coal mine if you paid them $1 million.
Right.
We're like, yeah, the coal, the pork, the coal jobs.
Those are the real Americans.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Because they're white.
Yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they don't give a fuck. If the coal miner union supported Democrats, they'd hate coal mines and say to shut them down. But anyway, in this case, they thought coal mining's great. It's not a thing. It's not where the future is. And it's certainly the future of the people in West Virginia and those parts of Indiana and Pennsylvania. The future for them is not in the coal mines.
No, and that's a good thing.
That's a good thing for
that's
everybody.
That's a good thing for them. That's good.
Hold on. Let's get out of our ivory tower for a second. We have to acknowledge that right now, because of the decline of the coal industry and the way that these coal companies have fucked over these people, there's a lot of people suffering in these parts of the
absolutely.
Country. And they need our help.
Yes.
They absolutely do.
I agree completely. I would love to help them. I don't want to help them get back in the coal mine.
Exactly.
I want to help them get the fuck out of the coal mine and get into a good job that has, you know, that is safe, that is not toxic,
that has benefits,
that, you know, that is going to be sustainable for the long term. That, you know, like, I want to help this generational population rise up and not have to go back to the coal mines.
And the grossly ironic thing was that after Hillary made that gaffe, she actually came up with a comprehensive plan for help and education.
Yes,
for
retraining.
But nobody talked about that because they just wanted to talk about her line. And then Trump said, yeah, I'm going to help the coal miners. And he didn't. And he's actually gone back on some promises.
Would you like to know an interesting fact about that?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about this interview that Hillary Clinton did in a little bit. But one of the facts that I learned from that was that during the election in 2008, when she ran against Barack Obama the first time, and then so the primaries and the election, media coverage of substantive policy issues over the course of the 18 months, they got about 255 minutes of coverage of substantive policy issues.
That's like every network, everything.
Would you like to know how many minutes were covering substantive policy issue in the 2016 election? Every network, everything for 18 months.
18 and a half.
32 minutes. 32 minutes covered policy.
How much about
actual
email
policy.
Server?
No idea. That's fucking crazy. In 18 months, this woman who knows everything and has a plan for everything, she got 32 minutes of coverage of her actual policy positions, the things she was actually going to do. That's it. So, just saying. We'll talk about that interview.
Well, how many interviews did we see, whether it was her or a surrogate? And they're like, I want to talk about her environmental plan. I want to talk about her health care. And they're like, yeah, but the email server. What about email server?
And what about what Trump said?
What about email server?
What about what Trump said? Did you hear what he said? It was so crazy, right?
That Jennifer Flowers is going to be at the front row of your debate. What do you think of that?
What about that?
What about Paula Jones's nose job?
Yeah. Did you see what Trump said? Oh, my God. It was crazy, right? You're gonna win. It's fine. I mean, the woman. Oh, fuck. Anyway. We'll talk about that in a minute, but we have so much to get through.
Okay, go ahead.
So we got to wrap up the Paris thing. But anyway, Okay. So we need to talk about, you want to do Comey?
It's your call.
The Hillary interview? Let's just talk about the Hillary interview since we were just talking about it. Mm-hmm. She did this interview for this tech website called Recode. She was interviewed by Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg, both, he's still with the Wall Street Journal, she previously was. I don't think you watched it.
No.
I watched it with Dana, and I've never seen her be so just pissed, honest, unpolished. She's still fucking brilliant, and she knows everything, but she just isn't running for anything ever again.
She can just
say whatever the fuck she wants.
Let me ask you,
mm-hmm.
would that Hillary, you think, have played better? I'm not necessarily sure she would have, because then she's shrill, she's unhinged, she's losing her mind.
That's what Dana said, too. I think, he thinks, his opinion was, yes, she would have done much better.
Yeah.
If she could just be... Say what you mean.
Especially in this election where anything that looks polished like a politician, people were like, ew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the highlights for me were she called out the DNC. I didn't know a lot of this.
Now that part I heard.
She said, you know, when I won this election, I had my own team during the primary, my own data team and my own, all these people. It was basically like Barack Obama 3.0. We had a lot of his old staffers and data people and all of that. And when I won, the party's nomination, one of two major parties in the country, right? I was handed basically nothing. The DNC was broke. They had little to no data. The data that they had was wrong. I inherited nothing. I had to pour money into the DNC to keep it solvent. Whereas Donald Trump, after the loss in 2012, the Republicans said, we're never going to let that happen again. They spent $100 million making this new data program, and then they partnered with these awful garbage people who run a private data firm who agreed to come help them and combine their data sets on the as long as they would pick Bannon and Kellyanne Conway.
Okay.
So when Donald Trump won, he was handed... like everything, right? Mm-hmm. So that was one of her complaints, and I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Everyone sort of accused her of like, oh, the DNC, they're just, you know, she's cozying up to Hillary and
well,
the best friends and whatever. And it's like, what the fuck? No.
People accuse us of that. The only thing we're defending the DNC from was this from asinine conspiracy theory that they set out to destroy the Bernie Sanders campaign. We're
right.
like, actually, no, he just wasn't a fucking Democrat.
Right. So why would what? Right.
Why would they go out of their way to help him?
Right, exactly. So that was really interesting. I thought the other thing that, well, there's a couple things she said, but one of the things I thought was really interesting was no one listened to us about Trump during the campaign, Trump Russia. She said, you know, I'm famously quoted back in 98, I think she said, or maybe it was 92, talking about the, quote, vast right-wing conspiracy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she said when we started talking, we had pretty solid evidence of Trump Russia stuff, and when we started talking about it, everyone was like, oh, here she comes with her vast right-wing conspiracy again.
Yeah.
And she's like, we were right, and nobody fucking listened to us. No one would pick up the story, no one would talk about it,
New York Times ran a front page thing that said
yes.
There's no collusion.
Right. She said the way that the media covered my email servers, she kept saying they covered it like it was Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
That was a problem. And as far as the Russia stuff goes, you know, they were talking about, it's fascinating, actually, how much she knows about what actually happened.
You know, let me just jump in. She did fuck up on the email server. Forget that she decided to install it. I get that. But I think she played it like, let's just slow play it. It'll get old. It'll go away. And it never did. And
yeah.
It never did. And instead of getting right out in front of it and laying it all on the table and being like, hey, you know what? Maybe it was a bad idea. Here's everything that happened. That probably would have helped, and she didn't play it that way. But moving on from that.
Yeah. She was talking about, you know, Russia certainly affected the election, but they had to know, they had to have some guidance. They had to know what to do, say, timing,
yeah.
all this stuff. And so they straight asked her, like, who do you think did that? And she's like, oh, Trump. I'm leaning Trump. all the evidence that I have seen, and it's...
Well, Trump's inner circle who understands how these things play, yeah. Right? Roger Stone and yeah. Manafort.
Absolutely. And, but, I mean, she's just straight, like, yes, Trump colluded with the Russians to impact... Like, no bullshit, no politics. Yeah. Yes, absolutely he did. And then the line that everyone... You feel one way about or another. She said, look, I take responsibility for every decision I made, but that's not why I lost. And that's right. And had she, I mean, a lot of people saw the interview and they were like, oh, Hillary's blaming everybody but herself. She's not taking any responsibility and right. blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like, even if she had said everything's my fault and I'm horrible, that would be wrong, stupid, and not true. Mm-hmm. And I don't, even then people would still hate her.
Oh, yeah.
So she may as well just be honest. Yeah. Here's what happened. Here's why. Yeah.
So it was refreshing and heartbreaking.
It was wonderful. And yes, time. I cried. There was this moment at the very beginning, and they had her, they brought her out, and they were playing that stupid Katy Perry song that was her
fight song.
Yeah. And I burst into tears. I literally just burst into tears, and I didn't know why. I just, I was like completely uncontrollable. And I looked at Dana and I was like, sorry, it just hit me that we lost. That I don't have to be living in this world that I'm living in right now. It didn't have to be this way. And sometimes I forget that we could have had her and we didn't. Makes me a little weepy even still. And what we did to her, it just, she knows everything. And anyway, it was hard. But she's amazing and...
Moving on, or do you want to anything else about her interview?
I just love her.
Okay.
Okay. God, we have so much to get through. I guess let's talk about Comey.
Okay.
It's a big story. He's going to testify to the Senate Intelligence Committee next week on June 8th, specifically about conversations that he had with President Trump.
Both open door and for the public.
Yes. Yes, in front of Congress and cameras, he's going to talk. There's some kind of backroom dealings that dealing with Mueller and the investigation that pertain to that, but I'm not going to get into it because it's kind of boring.
Well, no, let's get into it because there's a chance that Comey might say jack shit.
He is not going to do that.
I don't think so. But hold on a second. If Comey comes out there and sort of tips his hand to the direction Mueller is going in his investigation, he could. He could convince him to sandbag a little bit.
So Mueller wants his testimony, but the president... So we're going to talk about executive privilege here for a minute.
Yeah, but the point is I'm not sure that Mueller wants Comey to lay it all on the table.
Well, there's speculation that's exactly what he wants because he doesn't want to have to go to bat with the White House and subpoenas and fight executive privilege in court.
Huh. Okay.
So okay. That's why he's testifying publicly instead of talking to Mueller because potentially there's a greater chance that Trump would win and it would get dragged out in the courts.
Interesting.
Okay, so the substance of what everyone wants to know is, did Trump encourage Flynn, encourage Comey to stop the investigation into Michael Flynn?
Well, we know he did.
Right. Trump said so. So that's because that's obstruction of justice. That's a crime that the president, that's what took Nixon down. Okay, so Trump could potentially try to block Comey's testimony using something called executive privilege.
Which is unlikely.
Executive privilege is used by the president and other executive branch members to resist certain subpoenas by the legislative and judicial branch to access to info and personnel from the executive branch. Basically, the Supreme Court has multiple times ruled that it's not explicit in the Constitution, but that it's an important part of the separation of powers.
Yeah.
Because it prevents meddling by the legislative or judicial branch right. into the executive branch.
So.
Okay. And given that the federal government has supremacy, right? The Supreme Court has ruled that executive privilege exists. However, in this case, it is very unlikely that the court would side with Trump because part of executive privilege is saying that specifically that it would violate national security for these branches to know or for this information to become public. What we're talking about here is Trump himself has said out loud publicly and to the media about these conversations. He has talked about them himself. So it's very, very hard to make an argument.
And he's inferred that there are tapes.
Yeah. And so it's very, very hard to make an argument. Hey, I'm going to tell everybody about this. Oh, we can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't square with how executive privilege traditionally works.
No.
He can try.
Oh, they could find some jackass judge maybe to see it that way, but it's probably unlikely.
Yes. And if it gets to the Supreme Court, they would laugh him out of town because that's just not how it works. But it could potentially, he could block it and we can go to courts and it could be tied up for months and months and months.
Which I'm sure they're going to try to do.
Can you imagine what that would look like?
Oh, well, worse than it does now?
I mean, I don't know.
Look, I think in the next couple of days they might get down to the point it's like, how did the Saturday Night Massacre look?
Yeah.
They did it anyway.
Yep.
Because the zero-sum game calculus was pick your horrible option.
Right.
Your less horrible option.
Right.
So would it shock you that they pulled some bullshit, got a judge somewhere to issue a stay till there could be a hearing and, you know, all that crap?
No. And no, then hope I just it, think hope the optics of it are insane.
Hope there's a terrorist attack in the meantime.
I think the optics of it are insane, but firing Comey and thinking that was going to take the pressure off, they don't know anything about politics if they thought that was a thing.
Well, that was apparently Kushner's thing. Boy wonder.
I don't care whose it was. It was ridiculous and stupid, and the optics were horrifying, and they did not see that coming.
Right, so, and now they're paying for it.
So I have no idea if they care about optics or even understand what that word means.
Devin Nunes and John Cornyn, or if they have any say-so, are going to sit back and just let Comey get up there
actually,
and destroy the party?
Interestingly, well, they're in the House. He's going to the Senate.
I thought this was the House.
No, he decided to go to the Senate instead. The House Intelligence Committee, interestingly, is moving forward with their own investigation. Nunes, who's supposed to have recused himself from this, decided that that's not what he wanted
to do. He subpoenaed a bunch of people.
He did.
Got unmasking.
He did. No. Well, yes, but also he subpoenaed, he issued subpoenas for Flynn's company, the Flynn Intel Group, and the president's lawyer, Michael Cohen. And Flynn, so the Flynn Intel Group is the company that Michael Flynn opened to become a, what's it called for Turkey, a foreign
agent
for Turkey. They paid him $500,000 to negotiate on behalf of Turkey with the U.S. government while he was the national security advisor.
Yes.
So the House Intelligence Committee has... They previously asked him for all of these documents. He said, fuck you, no. And then they came back and said, he said, basically, you have to subpoena me. And they said, okay. So they did. And he is in the process of, him and his attorney are in the process of handing over documents specifically that pertain to the Intel Group, not his own personal documents.
Whichever ones they didn't shred.
Right. So that's interesting. I think... But I really do think that the Republicans at this point are like, okay, I'm not getting dragged down with this guy. It's so obvious at this point. If we don't do something, like, we're going to get taken down with him, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, somebody has to be the scapegoat. And the problem with that is if they could all coalesce and Trump and say, let's just put Flynn on the cross and get past this, they would. But Trump doesn't want to do that.
No. And now that Mueller's involved, there's no possibility of that anymore.
To make matters worse, Flynn has the goods on everybody. He tried to get immunity.
Yeah.
So, oh boy.
That's not a possibility anymore. Now that Mueller is investigating, they have no options.
That ship sailed.
He's going to get to the bottom of whatever the fuck it is, and they know it. And that's why they're like, oh, let's start looking like we're doing some serious investigating now. Because it's going to come out. And if we look like we were... complicit or trying to cover this up or not.
Oh, I don't think that's what Nunes is doing. I think what Nunes is doing is doing these end around... First of all, Nunes was supposed to have recused himself, so he shouldn't be issuing subpoenas to anybody.
Yeah.
Secondly, he's doing these end around subpoenas without consulting his House colleagues so he can say, I got this information and I looked at it and it's all exculpatory. Let's go home. I guarantee you he's going to do something like that. And Schiff is going to go low.
Maybe. I don't know. But I'm telling you right now, after Mueller was announced, Republicans know him. Everybody knows, likes, and respects him. I think a lot of them are like, fuck. Okay. We need to look like we're doing something.
They'll trash him when he comes out and announces all the collusion.
I disagree. I think that they are fucking scared. I think they hate Trump, and they realize that now that this is all going to come to light, they need to look like they're doing something.
I think they'll go down with the ship.
Okay, we disagree. Moving on. Let's talk about...
Well, we're coming up on the break. Did you want to get into one more thing before the break or take a break?
Let's take a break.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We got so much to get to. Feminism, little girl statue, Portland stabbing.
Stop.
You don't want me to give it away?
No.
Okay, it's going to be a surprise what we're going to talk about. I wanted to give a little teaser so people stick around.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they're not like, oh, okay, I heard half the show. Now I can go, you know.
Well, we haven't even talked about Covfefe yet.
Watch the cricket tournament.
Covfefe?
Spicer safe word. Okay. We'll be right back. Testimony. We got a whole lot to try to get through in this next 45 minutes, so go ahead, Rachel.
Okay. I would like to talk about Wonder Woman.
Yes, indeed.
Wonder Woman. Okay. Unless you've been living under a rock, I'm sure that you're all aware that the Alamo Drafthouse, which is a pretty cool movie theater that serves booze, decided to show in Austin Wonder Woman, two screenings for women only.
Was it the one on Lamar?
I don't know.
Because I've been there.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But it was, two screenings of Wonder Woman for just women. And they were only going to have women staff the event as sort of a celebration of women.
Yeah.
With an icon that has meant a lot to a lot of women over the last 60 years.
Now, even if I didn't know anything about this, I could totally guess what happened next.
Oh, masculinity's so fragile. Man.
A boy got butthurt?
Oh, man. All the boys are so butthurt, Trav.
That's not all the boys.
End of the world. It's the literal end of the world that they're doing this.
Not all boys.
Not all boys. It's true. Boys, not men.
Yeah.
So the man babies had a freak out and started furiously tweeting at the Alamo Drafthouse and writing letters.
Started furiously masturbating. Tweeting.
Yes,
I mean.
Tweeting. Yeah, right. That's not fair. You can't do that to us.
Keep in mind, this is one screening. This isn't like, we're only going to show this movie
to women.
Women.
Men are never allowed
forever.
To watch it. No.
It was like a one night, one time.
Two screenings.
Okay.
No, it's like, I think two different theaters in Austin. We're going to do one showing each just for women.
Just for women.
And it sold out super fast. People were really excited about it.
And Alamo Drafthouse does shit all the time. They do special screenings of this and Rocky Horror Show. And dress up like this for this show. And, you know, they just do special stuff.
Right. So, I mean, the man babies. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They freaked out. Some of my favorites were very strange. Like, and by the way, the Alamo Drafthouse just had snarky as fuck responses. Just not having it. Just like making fun of and mocking these men.
Yeah.
It was a thing of beauty. So one guy was like, well, are you going to show man-only screenings of The Terminator? And you're like, fucking Sarah Connor is the heroine of The Terminator. What are you talking about? Do you think the hero of that movie is the Terminator? Like, have you seen that movie?
Or Michael Biehn's character?
Okay. How about male-only screenings of aliens? I don't know.
Ripley.
Ripley. It's crazy. These men are stupid. So, two things of note beyond just the Alamo being kind of amazing and snarky. The mayor of Austin received a letter that he responded to, and I'm going to read that letter, and then I'm going to read his response because it's my favorite thing ever. This is just a very good example of what these men sound like. Here's what he said to the mayor. I hope every man will boycott Austin and do what he can to diminish Austin and to cause damage to the city's image. Mm. The theater that pandered to the sexism typical of women...
Typical of women.
That doesn't exist. Will, I hope, regret its decision. The notion of a woman hero is a fine example of women's eagerness to accept the appearance of achievement without actual achievement.
Wait, hold on a second. So is this guy protesting the movie? Or the idea of Wonder Woman?
I think...
Because that's what it sounds like.
I think he seems offended that women exist, frankly. But the notion... This is my favorite. Women's eagerness to accept the appearance of achievement without actual achievement. Women have never achieved anything, Travis, just so you know. Women learn from an early age to value makeup. That it's okay to pretend that you're greater than you actually are. Huh. So I guess because we like makeup, we're being fake. We're tricking you by pretending that we're pretty because we put makeup on, I think is what that means. Women pretend they don't know that only men serve in combat because they are content to have an easier ride. Okay, that's not true.
Yeah.
Women gladly accept gold medals at the Olympics for coming in 10th and competing only against the second class of athletes.
Then literally nobody gets a medal for coming in 10th.
And women are second class athletes, by the way, in case you didn't know that.
Okay.
Name something invented by a woman. Wow, I could name a million. Achievements by the second-rate gender pale in comparison to virtually everything great in human history was accomplished by men, not women. Uh-huh. If Austin does not host a men-only counter event, I will never visit Austin and will welcome its deteriorati on.
Deterioration, and he...
Yeah, deterioration.
Wow, this guy holds the key to Austin's tourism industry.
Oh, huh? My God. I mean, what will they do without him?
It's Mayor McCheese.
And I will not forget that Austin is best known for Charles Whitman. Does Austin stand for gender equality or for kissing up to women? Don't bother to respond. I already know the answer. I do not hate women. I hate their rampant hypocrisy and the hypocrisy of the women's movement, in quotes.
Okay.
Women do not want gender equality. They want more for women. Don't bother responding because I'm sure your cowardice will generate nothing worth reading. End.
Goodness.
So, the mayor of Austin, Steve Adler, wrote back.
And this Steven Adler, the drummer from Guns N' Roses?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Here's his response. Dear Mr. Amadori, I'm writing to alert you that your email account has been hacked by an unfortunate and unusually hostile individual. Please remedy your account's security right away, lest this person's uninformed and sexist rantings give you a bad name. After all, we men have to look out for each other. Can you imagine if someone thought that you didn't know women could serve in our combat units now without exclusion? What if someone thought you didn't know that women invented medical syringes, life rafts, fire escapes, central and solar heating, a wartime communication system for radio-controlling torpedoes that laid the technological foundations for everything from Wi-Fi to GPS, and beer? And I hesitate to imagine how embarrassed you'd be if someone thought you were upset that a private business was realizing a business opportunity by reserving one screening this weekend for women to see a superhero movie. You and I are serious men of substance with little time for the delicate sensitivities displayed by the pitiful creature who has maligned your good name and sterling character by writing that abysmal email. I trust the news that your email account has been hacked does not cause you undue alarm and wish you well in securing your account. And in the future, should your travels take you to Austin, please know that everyone is welcome here, even people like those who wrote that email, whose views are an embarrassment to modernity, decency, and common sense.
Wow.
Best, Steven Adler. So... He's kind of my hero. Again, I'm going to say it. Mayors kind of owning it this week.
They are.
Yeah. So.
You know, it's interesting, just a political aside about mayors, because you work in politics now. And yeah. Like, mayors are busy goddamn people.
Yes, they are.
Probably more so than governors in certain
ways. Yes, and they have a lot of power.
And, like, they have to interface with the public, like, every single day.
Yes.
They don't get a day off.
No.
Governors can get a day off. Congresspeople can hide now and then. Mayors really don't.
They're the face of the city.
Yeah, they're the face of like
they work
every
constituent
in the city.
They work closely with the police departments and fire departments and city council. And
especially like a big city like Austin, a big diverse city like Austin.
Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mayor Hancock is a very, very busy man.
You're really hands-on with police and mm-hmm. schools mm-hmm. and like... Mm-hmm. All the day-to-day shit, man.
Everything that happens in the city, the streets, you know, yeah, it's crazy. And they have a lot of power, and they affect your life in ways that you probably don't know or realize. But they are, yeah, and they're just nailing it right now. Okay, so the second thing that happened in response to this was ridiculous. A law professor out of New York City named Stephen Clark filed a complaint with Austin's Equal Employment and Fair Housing Office because of these two female-only screenings. What's interesting is that he's probably not wrong. discrimination in public includes movie theaters, and you're not allowed to discriminate based on, you know, race, gender, national origin, sex.
Right, right, but yeah. So his, I guess his angle is that this is a slippery slope to all movie theaters being women only.
What he's upset about, it's interesting. He's this gay guy, and he lives in New York City, so I'm like, what do you care? But he said, you know, if it had just been this sort of one-off thing, what he was upset about was actually the theater's snarky responses, that he thought that they seemed arrogant and that they were definitely violating the equal
protection.
Yeah, equal protections, and, I mean, what an asshole. I think they'll likely just pay whatever fine if they get fined, and I don't know. But that
they can
that
do a
happened.
Kickstarter and raise the money in
raise
a half
more
hour.
Money than yes. And then there was also, and I don't have it pulled up, so I'm not going to read it, and also we don't have time. But there was this really amazing comedy piece that was written that is, I think it's called Alamo Drafthouse Issues Apology for Starting the Manpocalypse.
Yeah,
and it
was
the
was
most
good.
Hilarious.
I wonder if you wanted to read it, but
that's the most hilarious thing I've ever read.
Wouldn't any decent defense lawyer just bring up Ladies' Night?
And yeah, men are allowed at Ladies' Night.
Yeah, but
ladies
they don't
just get
free drinks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ladies' Night.
And men
been,
have sued over that.
Yes,
the
they have. Yeah. Yes, correct.
Lots of times.
Uh huh. Because, good God. Megan Amram, who's one of my favorite, she's a comedic writer. She wrote on Parks and Rec. I follow her on Twitter, and she wrote a book too. But she said, "When just remember that when you're complaining about a women-only screening of Wonder Woman, you guys had man-only screenings of quote voting for 100 years."
Well,
so like, shut the fuck up.
Wasn't there just a man-only Toby Keith concert in Saudi Arabia for Trump's trip?
Uh huh.
So why don't you guys go?
Keith Urban, actually, I think it was.
No,
Toby
Keith Urban wouldn't do that.
I don't know. I don't like country music, but yeah, but that's Saudi Arabia. Women aren't allowed to do anything there. Anyway, just
they can't touch the orb. That's for sure.
No, fuck no. They're not allowed to be alive. Yeah. So they did expand. The Alamo Drafthouse did expand the screenings to a bunch of other cities, including Denver.
Yeah. Yeah. It turned
that
into
are all
a huge thing.
All sold
it was
out.
Just a little local Austin thing.
Yep.
And then these man babies turned it into a big,
yep,
huge thing.
Yes. And the Alamo Drafthouse did, I think, incredible things for their image, brand, notoriety. It was very smart.
I always loved them.
Yeah.
They're in San Antonio as well, and I think there's one in Houston. At least one, maybe two. And now there's two here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one that just opened up.
So go to your local Alamo Drafthouse if
yeah.
there's one around.
You
can
drink
there.
If you don't
want
to see Wonder Woman, I don't care.
You can
see
order
something.
Food. They'll bring you your food and booze while you're sitting watching the movie. You put the little flag up. You know, and they bring you your stuff. It's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, they're great.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, the other masculinity so fragile that we're going to talk about is the Fearless Girl statue in on Wall Street, the little girl that's standing up against
yeah,
the bull.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because I've heard some counter-arguments, and
yeah.
I'm just not sure exactly.
I have an opinion, and I also understand the other side's opinion, but...
well, let's talk about
Let's talk about it. So this asshole, Alex Gardega... decided to put his own statue next to the little girl because he's very offended by the statue, called the Pissing Pug. And it is a dog pissing on the leg of the Fearless Girl statue. The Fearless Girl statue standing in front of the famous Wall Street Bull, right? So his thing was that he was not offended by the feminist nature of the piece. He was offended because it was paid for by a... company called State Street Global Advisors, which is a Wall Street company.
Yeah, probably a hedge fund group.
And it was advertising/promotion in the guise of art.
Was it, though? Because I didn't even know about that until this.
Well, that's what's interesting about this whole... There's this whole argument swelling around the statue in... in our community,
frankly. Well, who
commissioned
the bull statue?
I don't know.
It was probably J.P. Morgan Chase or somebody.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm totally spitballing.
I have no idea.
I'll look it up while you read.
But what I want to talk about is I've been having some interesting conversations with even some of our friends about whether or not the statue is feminist or whether or not it's appropriate, whether or not it's art, whether or not... what is it, right? And we were having this conversation, you and I and your lead singer, Megan.
Yeah.
And there's this argument that because it was paid for by this firm, this money firm, I don't know exactly what they do, Global Advisors, some kind of hedge fund company or something, it's on Wall Street, that because of the origin of the statue, it can't be a feminist, it can't carry a feminist message, right? I disagree with that.
I do too.
I think once art goes into the world, the artist and whoever paid for it or commissioned it loses control over that piece of art. And maybe the intentions behind it weren't good, or the money behind it wasn't good, or whatever else the history of the piece is. I don't really care, because the impact that it had and the conversations that it started and the way that it's impacted individuals and people, that's the point of art, is people look at it and it impacts them.
Let me jump in.
Hold on.
Oh, I just want to give a little background, but go ahead.
I'm just going to finish my sentence.
Okay.
Once art goes into the world, it becomes the property of the world and the people who are looking upon it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The counter argument to that is that... it's advertising, not art, because it was paid for by a hedge fund company, and because Wall Street hurts women, that therefore they can't. I don't know. The argument against it is not compelling to me. But go ahead.
Okay, so actually, this is a little more complicated, but the charging bull was installed by Arturo de Modica, who might have been the same guy with the peeing pug.
No.
It's not. Okay. Nope. And it was guerrilla art. It initially got seized. This is in 1987, after the big crash, the mini stock market meltdown, as compared to 29. It was a big crash, but... And then there was a big outcry to leave it there, and it's supposed to be a symbol of the strength and prosperity of the American economy despite the crash, whatever.
Okay.
That
is not what it has come to.
Well, here's the thing. This is why the pug guy is full of shit. In 2004, De Modica announced that the bull sculpture was for sale. So he profited.
Uh-huh.
So symbol of prosperity and whatever, my ass, he made money off it.
And it hasn't come to mean that. Again, I'm going to go back to my point about art. I think people look at the bull and they see the bull as Wall Street, sort of charging against the American people and the people on Main Street.
Well, that's the thing about art, right?
That's exactly what I've been saying. Is once art is released to the public, it becomes the property of the public and how the public perceives it and how individuals perceive it. It's the owner loses control. He can yell and scream all day long about how it's about the American prosperity. Doesn't matter what he says it's about.
Mm-hmm.
It matters what people perceive it's about. And that's how I feel about the Fearless Girl.
Well, the bull guy is apparently pissed off about the Fearless Girl, too.
Very, yeah.
And like I said, I would give it a little more credence if he didn't sell it in 2004.
I wouldn't.
I guess he sold it, but one of the conditions was that he didn't allow like corporate sponsorship, so it's not like the Applebee's charging bull, which Applebee's would totally do if they could, or you know, the Walmart charging bull. Yeah. Or
I mean, again, I
depends
the
undergarments
point of the
bowl.
Fearless Girl statue, I don't give a shit why they put it there for promotion or advertising. It made an impact. We started talking about it, and it's a powerful piece of art, of public art, is what it is.
You know, I'm just glad there's a debate over art and the meanings of art and who should do what. And like the asinine part of me is, oh, sure, let the pug thing stand. And then we'll put like a giant bobcat about to eat the pug, and then we'll put, you know, just like keep it going.
I mean, I think that it's offensive, the pug thing, because
it's kind of cheap, right?
Very.
Yeah.
It seems very like Calvin and Hobbes pissing on something. That
right, those
stupid
guys
truck
that have
decal
the
thing. It's like
Calvin pissing on a Ford logo.
Okay,
or
cool. Piss
whatever.
On a little girl. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's cheap. It's stupid, and to miss the point of. But anyway, I'd welcome your comments and feedback. I have a lot of friends that disagree with me about that piece of art, the Fearless Girl statue, that think that it's corporatist and sellout and it can't be feminist because of where it came from. I just disagree.
I think
that it is in the eye of the beholder, and I don't particularly care who paid for it. And
well, like I said, it's kind of refreshing that we're having a debate about the meanings of pieces of art.
Yeah.
To me, that's kind of cool.
It is. It is. Okay. I want to switch gears because I do not want to not talk about this because I think it's so important. It's not super pleasant, but I want to talk about it. The stabbing that happened in Portland.
Yes.
So there's this piece of shit. I'm not going to give him a name. I don't care. Who, was on a train in Portland, and there were these two African-American young women, one of whom was dressed in traditional Muslim dress, and he began verbally assaulting them, calling them names, telling them to go home, talking about ISIS, talking about how they were terrorists, and some Good Samaritans that were on the train at the same time stepped in and intervened, three of them. The first one was this guy named Micah David Cole Fletcher. He stepped in and started trying to intervene and not have this verbal assault continue. Apparently him and the piece of shit started shoving each other. The attacker then stabbed him in the neck. Two other men came over and were also intervening. Their names, I'm probably going to butcher one of them, but one of them was Ricky John Best, 53 years old, and the other was Taliesin Mirdin Namkai Meche. I'm so sorry that I probably got that wrong. He was 23. These two men were also stabbed, and both of them died, intervening in this assault on these two young girls. Horrifying, obviously. Background on the attacker. He is a self-proclaimed white nationalist. The Portland had the Rose Parade a couple weeks ago, and he was interviewed by some journalists because he was wearing the American flag as a cape, yelling the N-word in the streets, and giving a Nazi salute here and there.
So he'll be on Bill Maher next week?
Yeah. He has his own website, which is just full of horrifying, racist, sexist, Islamophobic, xenophobic, you know, just he's the worst. Called Timothy McVeigh a true patriot. In his interview with the press the day of that parade, he said he would kill anybody who called him a racist. He's not a racist, he's a white nationalist, and he believes in the balkanization of people of different races and national origins.
Well, okay then.
So,
well, here's the scary part, right? Because you know that if it was me or Dana or
me.
You or anybody we know on that train, we would have done the exact same goddamn thing.
Yes.
And we'd be dead.
Yeah.
Because if these two average size or they look like kind of decent size athletic guys couldn't fend off this crazy guy with a knife, I certainly could not have.
Right.
Nor could you have.
No.
Nor could have Dana.
No.
And maybe it is time for us liberals to start arming.
Yeah.
You know,
so
good guy with a gun.
Yeah. A lot's been made of this. The mayor, again, Mayor Ted Wheeler, I'll love the mayors this week, pulled two permits for two alt-right events that were scheduled for June 4th and June 10th.
Yes.
Said they would not allow those events to go forward because the city was obviously in mourning. The survivor, the guy that was stabbed in the neck, who sort of was the initial intervener, Micah David Cole Fletcher, is very barely survived. And he did something I think that's kind of extraordinary. After all of this, there's been this outpouring of support and calling these men heroes, and they are. GoFundMes have been started, and a tremendous amount of donations have been given to him and to the families of the people who died. And he, after all of this, came out and did this Facebook video, and he said, like, I appreciate it and stuff, but I think what we're failing to see here is the two little girls. We're not talking about them. Mm-hmm. They were under attack, and can you imagine what this will have done to their lives?
Yeah.
And we're not talking about them, and we're not, like, it's, he's like, it's obscene the amount of money that you're giving me, and where's their, like, scholarship funder? Where's the, you know what I mean? Like, what are we doing for them? They're the victims in this.
Yeah.
And he talked about white privilege, and he talked about how he said, you know, we're pretty liberal here in Portland, but we also have a history of just doing everything the same way and kind of not addressing some of the structural problems that we have. And he said, if anything comes out of this, I want it to be that we really think about white privilege and white supremacy and really do more for those little girls.
Good for him.
He's a fucking...
Good for him.
Hero. So, the now, names of the girls have not been released. Otherwise, I would be talking about them, but I don't know them.
Yeah. Well, I think they're at least one is under 18.
I believe, right? Both of them are minors. Yes.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it was really horrifying, but also, you know, I'm glad that these men intervened. I'm glad that they saw something that was not right and that they did something about it. And it's a fucking tragedy that they had to lose their lives. And the 23-year-old was, the last thing he said was, tell everyone on the train that I love them, which makes me cry. But yeah.
Now, unless I've missed it, and I may have missed it, because I know in the initial day or two after, Trump didn't say anything. Did he ever say anything about this?
I don't know.
Even actually, a generic, we abhor these acts of violence. Anything.
I not that I'm aware of.
Because I know it was a flap that within the first 24 to 48 hours, he didn't say anything.
No, nothing.
Okay, well.
Nothing. And it happened right around Memorial Day. It was on, I don't have the date, but it was right around Memorial Day, and people were talking about how, you know, these,
so much in the news, it got pushed out. I mean, this would be huge news for weeks. But well, again, we've said it again and again. These people have now found what they feel is a safe space.
That's right.
And when they get emboldened, they shit like this happens, and there will be more of it.
Yes. So, anyway, super sad. Super sad. And the families have put out statements about who these men were and what their lives were like. And, you know, it's just, it's hard. But certainly they are heroes. And certainly I hope that everyone takes to heart Micah David Cole Fletcher's statement about how we address this going forward.
Kind of grotesque subplot, or at least this was the case a few days ago. The one of the victims cannot afford his medical bills and had to do a Kickstarter.
God. That's probably the only survivor was this guy, Michael David Cole Fletcher.
Yeah.
So, okay. Let's move on to something fun.
Daryl Issa almost jumping off a roof.
You want to talk about Covfefe?
What is there to say? Trump was like, he had just taken his Ambien or whatever, and he was on a late night rant, and he was trying to say, I'm doing great besides bad media coverage, I think, and instead...
Despite the constant negative media, negative press, Covfefe.
Covfefe.
And he just
Covfefe. He didn't take it down, he didn't correct it, he obviously just like fell asleep with this phone in his hand, or something in his hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, it would be funny, but it's also like just fucking horrifying, like our president is a giant baby who probably has dementia.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's getting us out of global warming treaties and as the nuclear launch codes and everything else. And it's a joke, but it's also like, Jesus fucking Christ, man.
Yeah. It is what Twitter was built for. And it gave everybody a very good opportunity to make very, very funny jokes.
And Spicer kind of said, kind of deadpan, one of his few, I thought, funny moments was like the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, good job, Spicer. What else are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah. Yeah. But that was the big sort of news, like the big sort of pop culture thing that happened this week.
We speculated on what it could mean, and we decided that it's Spicer's safe word.
Yeah. Yes. Kind of going off of that bizarre Trump behavior, I want to read the Hope Hicks statement.
How does she do it herself?
I don't think she wrote it, but I think this is another sign that he's losing his mind. So Hope Hicks is...
Well, was this after Covfefe, or when was this?
This was after...
after the trip. After he just got back from the trip.
Yeah. 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 Which we can talk about if we have time.
I guess we haven't really...
Hope Hicks is the communications director for the White House.
Only 28 years old.
And she produces this statement that I don't have an explanation for. But it sounds very much like something Trump wrote about himself.
It sounds very much like something North Korea released on Kim Jong-un's birthday.
Yes.
Read it.
Okay, get ready. President Trump has a magnetic personality and exudes positive energy, which is infectious to those around him. He has an unparalleled ability to communicate with people, whether he is speaking to a room of three or an arena of 30,000. He has built great relationships throughout his life and treats everyone with respect. He is brilliant with a great sense of humor and an amazing ability to make people feel special and aspire to be more than they ever thought possible. What in the actual fuck?
And it was just resoundingly laughed at by everybody.
Well, it's... Okay, then this guy, this journalist, and pardon me for not remembering his name, said, I've known Trump forever. This is the Trump I knew from the 80s. This is exactly the kind of thing that he used to do. He used to call
write his own press releases. Pretend he's his own publicist.
He was like, we never knew if he was just trolling us or not, but now we know. Like, no,
this is his MO.
This is him. This is what he does.
Yeah.
And sort of the analysis that I was reading about it was like, the bizarrest part of this is not only is none of it true, it's like opposite day. It's like opposite day, right?
Yeah.
But this is not even the person he ran as. He ran as someone who's not a positive energy. Make America great again. America sucks. Everything's bad. Bad deals. Like, no, that's not true. That's not what his persona and what got him elected is not any of this.
No, it was a strongman dictatorship.
Strongman dictatorship. The world is chaos, the world is shit, and I'm going to fix it because I'm good and everybody else sucks and you're losers and they're losers. And I mean, then you read this and you're like, what? Who is that? What are you talking about? I mean, not only is it opposite day, but it's also like not his brand.
Yeah.
So it's just completely bizarre.
Yeah, it's Trump circa 1987 that he penned himself before he gets introduced for a fundraiser.
Right. I mean, he may as well have said, like, he also fucks a lot of models and, like, women all over the world think he's got a huge dick.
That's coming next.
Right.
That's next week's Hope Hicks press release.
That's the kind of shit he used to say about himself in the 80s. This is that version of it as president.
Yeah, he called People Magazine and talked about everybody who's banging.
Yeah. I mean,
Under the pseudonym John Miller.
It's bizarre. John Barron, whatever.
Do we want to talk about Kathy Griffin?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, Kathy Griffin is sort of in the atmosphere of Bill Maher to me. I don't think she's really said or done anything all that funny in 20 years. I'm just not a huge fan. I don't have anything against her. Like maybe Bill Maher's a bad comparison.
Yeah.
But anyway, she did spread in what was it, a magazine?
Yeah, I think Vanity Fair.
Where she had like a beheaded Trump puppet head.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, it's probably over the line. And people lost their shit and was over the line. She had to apologize. And she lost her CNN segment, which I didn't even know she had a CNN segment because I don't watch CNN.
Right. Why would I do that?
So, okay. It was a big flap. But then, like, the White House doubled down and said that the 11-year-old son, Barron, saw it, thought it was real, and screamed.
Yeah. And then she got a lawyer. Because she is getting death threats. She can't leave her house. She's suing Trump with this feminist lawyer, sort of like the millennial Gloria Steinem. She's suing Trump and for...
I don't know.
Something. Defamation.
Yeah, I can't really back Kathy Griffin.
I don't care. The funniest part to me is all of these people screaming about free speech all the time. Free speech this, and I don't give a shit if it's offensive, and you're not allowed to tell me what I can
Fuck
say.
Your
you're not
feelings.
Allowed to tell what I can do. Political correctness, blah! And then an artist does something that they don't agree with, and it's like, oh my God, oh my God, this is so offensive. How dare, fuck
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Maybe it was tasteless, certainly, but I don't care. Like, if, what if we'd done that to Obama? You literally lynched effigies of him and burned them in the streets for fucking years, yeah. okay? I don't want to hear it. I don't care. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. It's not offensive to me. I get it's tasteless. It's art. I don't care. I don't. Like, I just don't.
Well, look, she lost her column and she's facing a shitstorm. And yeah. I mean, I'm not defending her. I'm not a Kathy Griffin fan. I don't give a fuck about Kathy Griffin.
I don't. I'm not defending her, but I'm also not excoriating her. I don't think that she's like the worst garbage person ever for doing that. I mean, I think it's tasteless and it's
stupid. I didn't find it amusing.
I think that the reason I was more upset about the Obama stuff was because it was so fucking racially offensive.
Sure.
They didn't cut his head off and hold it. They lynched and burned a version. Like, it's so racialized.
And the imagery behind that, and the history behind that.
Yeah. This is just like...
That her thing is just, I don't like this guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, she probably shouldn't have.
No, she shouldn't have. She shouldn't have.
I just
And it wasn't funny or impactful in a positive way.
No, it wasn't. I don't really even know the point.
There's a million things you could have done with that that would have been impactful and interesting. And maybe it wasn't even her idea. Maybe it was some artist's idea.
Right.
But who gives a fuck?
I don't.
They're going to milk it, though, for months and months and months and months. And okay.
Yeah.
And to say that Baron has been traumatized because he's 11 and doesn't know somebody holding a Halloween mask when they see it. But whatever.
Did anyone give a shit about the Obama girls?
Oh, please.
Yeah. So, I don't care. That's my point. I don't. It doesn't offend me. It doesn't make me feel anything. I don't think it's funny or interesting, but I don't care.
Okay, well, what do we got in our 10 minutes left?
I think we should talk about Angela Merkel and what she said, because I think it's important. So Trump had just finished his disastrous tour of Europe, shitting all over NATO and Europe and everything else while he was there.
And pumping up Russia.
Yep. And after that was done, Angela Merkel, who is the Chancellor of Germany, said, basically she said Europe can no longer rely on foreign partners. She said, Europe really must take our fate into our own hands. Relying on others, quote, is over to a certain extent. That's what I have experienced in the last few days. So she never specifically mentioned Trump, but he had just visited, and the last few days would be the time that he was there. And that's pretty dangerous for us, for the world's security, for, I mean, he's only been in office for, like, what, 150 days? Maybe not even that much. And our strongest allies on Earth are like, yeah, can't count on them anymore, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, elections have consequences, I guess. It's a huge blow to our position in the world and the hard work that we've done over the last 60
years. And it's another thing that's not making most conservatives blink. Because take the anti-Trump conservatives out of this equation for a while, because they've been opposed to him since the campaign.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the conservatives who stuck with him. There's a little bit of erosion starting, but as far as most conservatives are concerned, that's fine.
Yeah. They sort of hate globalization anyway.
Yeah.
America's better, and why do we need the fucking...
Why do we need
Europe
allies?
Europe, and we don't need allies. We can just take care of ourselves. I mean, it's just so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dangerous. The whole point of globalization is to prevent global war.
Yeah.
The whole point
And to unite, to stop threats like international terrorism.
Right. Right.
Threats,
global warming.
Threats to the planet
mm-hmm.
as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
fuck it. We'll just become isolationists, and I don't know. It's horrifying. And then I guess we'll end on Daryl Issa, the least important story of the day.
Well, there was a weird instance a few days ago where Daryl Issa, there were some protesters or people outside his office or home or wherever it was.
So it's his office.
His office.
They go there every week on that day, and I think it Tuesday. Every Tuesday they go and they stand across the street and they're his constituents. I would not call them protesters. I would call them his constituents.
Right,
who would like
right,
to have
right,
a conversation with him, and he refuses to engage them.
Sure. Just like here, Cory Gardner here.
So his opponent who's running against him, this guy named Mike Levin, was with the constituents, protesters as Daryl Issa would call them. And he sees, he said, so I'm going to tell you what the original story that was reported was, and then I'm going to tell you what actually happened.
Okay.
The original thing was Mike Levin tweeted out this photo of Daryl Issa standing on the roof of his office building. And Mike Levin said he's so afraid of his constituents that he's standing on the roof. And it blew up.
Yeah.
Because this is a, and because it's kind of a thing that's happening. A lot of these Republican senators and Congress people are avoiding their constituents like the fucking plague.
No, they can't talk about AHCA. They don't want to talk about Trump.
They don't want to talk about anything. They just do not talk to me because I don't. It's because
they're on the wrong side of everything that everybody wants.
And it's getting a lot of media attention when these people are yelling at their Congress people at town halls. So that's the story as we see it originally. That's not what happened. So it was clarified later. But it's politics, so you make the story what you want
to
be.
So what was Icy doing? Was he patching a hole in the roof?
Apparently he came out earlier to talk to his constituents. They're like on the side of the road where his office building is, there was like a bunch of supporters, like Trump people.
Oh.
And then on the other side of the road is where the quote protesters or his angry constituents stand.
Right.
And so he came out and he was talking to the Trump supporters. And then he went upstairs and you can see he's got a cell phone in his hand on the roof to take a picture of the constituents down below.
To try to show like, hey, look, all the Trump supporters are here too, or something like that?
Yeah.
Ostensibly?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he tweeted a couple minutes later that photo.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back down very strangely and had a piece of cake on a plate that he brought over to this guy wearing like
was
a Make America
like Marie Antoinette?
Great again. And, like, gave him this cake and then went back inside.
Was he dressed like Marie Antoinette?
Yes. No. So, that's the story. Like, basically, it is true that he won't talk to those constituents. He won't hold a town hall. He will not address them at all. He'll
and
talk
he says,
to the,
let
the
them
supporters.
Eat cake.
But I guess he needed to bring one guy a cake. Maybe it's his birthday. I fucking don't know. But, so the real story is much more nuanced, as always. But
the real story
the,
is, let's
the,
please
the
fucking
image,
defeat ISA already.
Yes, please support Mike Levin if you can. If you live there, you know, vote against
him. I
mean,
ISA barely won in 16.
He's such a garbage person.
He's probably toast, hopefully.
Oh, I hate him. But
did we talk about the Montana special election last week?
No.
And the Ben Jacobs getting body slammed? And
no.
Was that just this past week?
No.
Oh, did you guys touch on it, talk about it at all in the Girlcast?
Did we? I don't think so. You haven't posted that yet.
Okay, well, the literal night before the Montana special election, the Republican candidate body slammed a reporter.
And there's audio of the exchange.
Who was asking him about the CBO report of AHCA. And he won anyway. But like 70% of the vote was already in.
That's the story. Everyone wants to talk about how like, oh, Republicans don't care about anything and da-da-da. Maybe that's true. But also, like you said, if they do mail-in ballots like we do.
Yeah.
And so like 70 or 80% of people had already voted before this happened.
Yeah.
Can't retake your ballot. So
no.
It really, I don't know if it would have had a huge impact on the election. But
probably
the
not.
Story is not that it wouldn't have. The story is that most people already voted anyway.
Yeah. And the story is that conservatives reacted with, well, good, it's about time somebody
stood up to these horrible reporters.
Journalists who doing their job.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, there's a real, we called it. We said that, you know, the Republicans probably going to win by single digits, high single digits or mid single digits, and he did. And Ossoff in Georgia has a really, really good chance of winning, and that's coming up.
Yeah.
That's coming up really soon, isn't it? Like next week or
sometime in June. I don't know the date, but
yeah.
It's coming up.
It's coming up.
So, anyway, that's what happened this week.
Yeah, we didn't get to everything.
No.
And there will be a whole new world of stuff to cover next week.
Yes, of course.
We'll be talking about the Comey hearing unless they drag it out. I can't believe for the life of me that Republicans and Trump are just going to sit back and say, okay, well, we'll see what happens. They're going to try to stop him.
I don't know.
If I'm Jim Comey, don't walk close to anyone on the street with an umbrella.
Yes.
Don't drink any strange
don't
tea.
Drink air.
Prepare your own tea.
Yeah.
And I'm not even
joking. Nope. Absolutely.
I'm sure Jim Comey knows these things.
Poison is.
He's read a few
method.
Spy novels.
Uh huh. Yeah. Anyway.
He's read a few dossiers on
how Russians kill people.
On Russian neutralization of hostile adversaries.
Yeah.
Okay. So on that chipper note. Try to pay attention on, it's coming up on the 8th, so that's what, Thursday, Wednesday? Someday?
Yeah.
Monday,
I don't know, the 8th.
Tuesday, I think it's Thursday.
Okay.
Wednesday. Okay. And Comey is set to testify behind closed doors and...
Nope. In public.
Both.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing
but
both.
But we'll hear from him.
Well, they you know what? You disagree with me. There's still a chance he might just sandbag if Mueller asks him to.
Mueller doesn't want him to.
That's... Okay. Well, maybe. We don't know that. We're speculating.
Okay.
Okay. So I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm sorry. I will post this podcast and last week's one. It's kind of a week, but yeah. You know, when is it? When it is it not?
Yes.
Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Have a great weekend and week. Adios.